something that Product Market Alliance was looking at is a lot more of the tasks we've done over the last year lead to more revenue driving activities. So having that closer relationship with the marketing team, even if you're putting up the product, is really important, especially in this economy when people are trying to pinch money, even your customers you're trying to sell to, like they have so many tech solutions, like why do they need yours? So being really hands-on, having that voice of the customer in that marketing is gonna be super important for driving revenue for your company.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life, the podcast where we talk to product marketers about life, their careers, and product marketing overall. I'm Sid Caton, your host. I'm a senior product marketing manager at Beekeeper, and today I got the chance to talk to Laura Kaminsky. Laura is the head of product marketing at iTrade Network, and we had a really interesting conversation talking about her career arc from graphic design to product marketing, how the pendulum between product marketing sitting underneath product versus marketing and the pros and cons of both. Spoiler alert, we definitely both agreed that it should be marketing in most cases. And we also talked about how small tech and product marketing in small tech looks a lot different from product marketing in big tech. Really excited for you to hear the conversation, and let's jump into it. Laura, can you start by just introducing yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Sid. My name is Laura Kaminsky. I am a product marketer that lives at the intersection of strategy and just life. How can we bring more value to customers in our daily lives? I am currently the head of product marketing at iTrade Network. iTrade is the largest trading platform for perishable goods in the food service industry in North America. So happy to be here today.
Awesome. Well, that sounds really cool. I'm curious, what do you do when you're not product marketing?
A lot of my time revolves around my family. I have two kids in middle school. All their lives kind of like takes up my social life. Most of it revolves around hockey. Excuse me, we're a big hockey family. But personally, I'd love to go hiking. I've got two extra large dogs and try to go hiking at least once a day with them. They have a lot of energy. So that's also like my social outlet to get that energy out and walk with some of my friends and stuff. So that's kind of what I do in the downtime.
Yeah, that sounds like enough to keep a person busy. Like hockey mom alone is probably plenty, right? Very cool. Well, then I guess with that, we can jump into more of your career and kind of plans with product marketing. So I'm curious, like, yeah, everyone has that stumbled into product marketing moments. I'm curious what yours was.
Yeah, my product marketing, my entire career has kind of always been in the marketing world. I started out in the graphic design, what today would be called maybe front-end user design, and was working for a national retail brand. And I was sitting there thinking, I had to design this. I got to do it. But why do we have to do this? Who are we targeting? What did you learn about them? And it was always just handed down just like to be the doer, the task person, which is awesome. And got to use my creativity, but I always wanted to know the why and the data behind, like, why are we targeting this audience? So that actually led me to get my MBA. So my MBA was in marketing and business analytics. That led me to open the door for my next role, which was in a product marketing role, really diving into the strategy to why people buy, how we could best help them. So I always loved the helping of the people part. So you're not really the sales role. You're how to bring more value to you and do it through data and really help you along. So that's kind of how I fell into the product marketing side of it.
That's very cool. And I'm seeing a lot more graphic design backgrounds coming into the product marketing world. A few of my friends, actually, hopefully it'll be on the pod at some point. I'm curious, what kind of superpowers does that come with? I mean, I guess even a pros and cons list, what did you have to shore up in terms of your knowledge? And then where does it really help you in every day as a product marketer?
Sure. So I think it definitely, you definitely know the revenue side of the business. So your fund line, what's driving revenue, what's not, especially like in graphic design, you're like, oh, we got to shove more emails out the door. We got to do more social posts. We need more graphics. So you have your pulse on kind of like the reactive side of the business of like how you're like the downstream of what's going on. So you have your pulse there. You are also very well at communicating. So in product marketing, it's all about translating. A lot of it's a lot of internal communication coming from the product side, the sales side, and the marketing side. Graphic designers are great at organizing thoughts on page, PowerPoint slides, Google slides, so like everyone hates the slide decks, but just putting that thoughts together in a concise way. We are the human GPT of the business to like translate that all together. So that's definitely been a pro coming at that side. I think people looking into what other skills you might need to level up is maybe more the technical side. So I did have a little bit of a technical background being knowing this was going back years ago, more the coding before you had templates to do web stuff. So having a little bit of a technical background. So being able to look at technical and come at it with the customer point of view of like, what is, how do those really translate into a customer, what they would need. So be able to talk to a really technical person and then translate that to the other side of the business is maybe a skill to level up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to graphic design, I'm curious, there's a lot of recent chatter about, you know, the newest ChatGPT model that can produce new images. I'm curious, what do you have to say to people who are saying graphic designers are going to be out of jobs and stuff like that?
I know we actually were talking about that even with my own company. We're, you know, like sharing little videos, snippets of stuff, but you still need that human interpretation of the value side. So it's almost like the designers also have a little bit product marketing side in them as well, as how does this translate onto the page? So yes, you can make a cool graphic, but then when the person lands on a landing page, what is the story and the flow of the conversation of how you're guiding the person? So that graphic person role helps shape that, and how you do it with visual. Maybe it's a mood, maybe it's the color scheme you're using, maybe it's the graphics that you're using. So you still need that more strategic kind of consulting approach, not just the give me an image now. So that's kind of where I can see them filling into that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like when I see that, like the first few questions I have are like, first off, is this person who's saying graphic designing is whatever, like the jobs are gone, has that person ever actually hired a graphic designer? Because the way I see it is like any graphic designer that hears, hey, like some of this could be done with AI is probably pretty happy. If they look at their backlog, it's like, sure, take some of that stuff off my plate so I can do the rest of the work I need to do anyway. So yeah, I think it's somewhat a silly take, but that's my hot take that I'm adding to the conversation, I guess. You mentioned your current role a little bit. I would love to hear a little bit more about what you're doing at iTrade Network, what your team looks like.
Sure. So we are a smaller company, about 200 employees. Our marketing team is just 5 people. I am the lone product marketing role, so within the company. And it's a lot different. I came from a larger company that was about 5,000 people. So definitely night and day. Seeing the other side of the business with a smaller company, reporting up to the CMO. So I shifted from a reporting up to the CPO arm product side, now reporting out to the marketing side. So I've been able to see, two jobs ago, I also was on the side. So I've seen both sides, both the product and marketing, but it's been pretty cool seeing the marketing side, being able to be more hands-on and driving those revenue driving activities.
Where do you think product marketers should sit?
It's always like the $1 million question between the two. Like the old school of thumb was always like, oh, if you're in like a high growth stage, you want to be hands on with the product. So you're making sure it's product market fit if you're not on the other side. But what we've actually seen a shift this past year, something that Product Market Alliance was looking at is a lot more of the tasks we've done over the last year lead to more revenue driving activities. So having that closer relationship with the marketing team, even if you're putting up the product, is really important, especially in this economy when people are trying to pinch money, even your customers you're trying to sell to, like they have so many tech solutions, like why do they need yours? So being really hands-on, having that voice of the customer in that marketing is gonna be super important for driving revenue for your company.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like it depends on the scenario for sure. But yeah, I mean, same with me, like in a sales-led organization, I just think it makes a lot of sense for product marketing to sit under marketing and actually, like you said, like contribute to revenue driving activities. So one thing I remember, I think we were talking about with iTrade Network, you're also working on a AI product. Would love to understand kind of the makings behind that and how you kind of filtered through the noise to get to the signal.
Yeah, so just like any other company right now, we're trying to, how do you incorporate AI features into your product, which is always like the backwards way. It's always like, what can we solve for our company? Maybe AI is the tool to help with that. So we're, again, sitting at the intersection. We really sat down to see Again, what are those biggest challenges that our customers are facing? We have this AI tech we can push on top of it. How do those two come together? So a lot of it's also people want to be the first to market, but it's really forced our product managers to really sit down and relook at what are the biggest challenges our customers are having and how can we bring more value to them faster with this AI arm coming in.
That makes a lot of sense. So as you start to build this out, like what's it going to mean to be an AI first company in today's world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not just bringing products to market, but also just how do you use AI in your own personal role? One of the things we're seeing is we've had like early adopters. So people that are like super excited about using just AI in our actual jobs. And then we have obviously the laggers. People are like, okay, I have to use it. Now is another tool I have to use. But as we're getting more into it, the product marketing role is going to be really important because as maybe more documents are coming in, let's say you're starting to chat and a GPT about a new module you're launching and the documents just start talking to each other without adding more input. So it's like data on top of data on top of data processing. And you still need to kind of take a step back and see what more data are you going to feed into it. So it's only as good as the data you put in. So you still need to have the human conversation. Maybe you're uploading, you had a customer convo, you upload that transcript, or you're doing like win-loss report and uploading those things into there. So adding more of that value add is going to be important as you're adopting these internally versus just kind of like recycling the latest documents that you've always used.
Yeah. The prompts matter so much. I went through this exercise of like putting in a lot of files from my win-loss from customer research and interviews. And without the right like prompting around that as well, and of course the right data, sometimes you get like really strange results. Like I started getting almost like every time I got an answer from the GPT, it was always just like, it went too customer focused. And then every single word of copy was always creating a customer story. And I was like, no, like we still need to think about the product and the business overall, not just the customer stories.
I know. One example, I got a pretty cool example how we've used it recently. We made a GPT. So we have a new feature, new product coming out. It's gone through heavy data and I needed some customer testimonial or like how much time did this sell, the old way versus new way. And we made a GPT, uploaded so much like concentrated stuff, like for example, usage reports, like all the comments from the beta program people, all the customer support calls, all that kind of technical information, and it was able to synthesize and said customers using this saved X amount of time within X amount of days. So something like that would have required me to have maybe like 15 conversations on the phone. Maybe we had to do some data crunching manually, but it also gave me that like direction. So I was able to, it was 20 minutes of me and my counterpart just going through just what else can we add and synthesizing that. And a year ago, that literally would have took about 2 weeks of time. This took about 25 minutes. It gave us a really solid direction and some data points. And then we still have to go back and validate it live with real humans. But the 2 weeks of data crunching was like done in 20 minutes. So that was a big time saver.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there a tool you use to do that?
That was the enterprise version of ChatGPT.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, that's actually a great use case and something I've dabbled with a little as well. It's like, okay, let's take all of what we're hearing from our customer base in terms of how they're using this feature. What are some of the ROI metrics that often becomes really important? Like you said, customers saved X amount of time. And then having that kind of help you process and then use the data in a valuable way. So that's a really cool kind of use case of it. We were talking about how product marketing in your kind of lens should sit under a marketing function and be focused more on the revenue drivers. I'm curious, like with iTrade Network, what's that look like within your team? Like who do you collaborate with? How does that usually play out?
Sure. So one example of something we actually started this year is called called them pods. I think it was like prioritize, optimize, deliver, something like that. But it was so normally, obviously, product marketing usually has a go-to-market meeting and you have like in your area of the business, maybe you have point people from different areas. We still have those. This is a little bit different. This was hand selecting like point people from your department. So we had customer success, my marketing counterpart, myself, a solutions role, solutions engineer, a product person, and a salesperson. So almost like a mini, some people call them tiger teams, but they were very focused on three areas of the business that we're going after. And again, we have, I think, like 8 or 9 products within there, maybe like 15 segments at the end of the day, but like I'm only one person, I can only do so much. So what's going to drive the most revenue for the business? Let's focus on these lanes to get like a hyper team. So some cool things came out of that, like some just bringing feedback faster to market. So that sales person was able to talk to their team and bring it back to the meeting. And that was able to actually action out. For example, we were able to, we found quickly when our solutions engineer was running these demos, they wanted to have more real life data in there. So we brought that back to our engineer. They were able to like load up a quick demo environment that had fake data, but it was more realistic to how an actual customer account would work. And then they took that back and used it on a customer meeting. And the customer was like, wow, it relates it more to me versus just like generic data. So it was actually like a similar line size company. We invented some data. So that's one example of how we're able to have that like more high velocity feedback loops within like our concentrated area that we're going after. So that not only like it helped the company, but also helped these point people. So they might not have been a director level or so that usually sits on these meetings, but also helped elevate these people to have a say in the go-to-market that maybe they wouldn't be able to have. So that's been one area that we've been able to do. And another area is just literally sticking to like the tried and true go-to-market process. So every other week, I have a meeting with the one product line that has the go-to-market team. So that would be the product manager, it'd be myself, be the management person. And then we also have our technical counterparts. So the roles that write the technical documentation, the training, or the ones that actually do the demos with the customers. So that's just a weekly, like, what's coming out in 6 weeks. So always looking ahead, always like 6 weeks ahead. I know that doesn't seem like too far, but it's like, that's as far as that we can get. Usually I like to be a little bit farther out. But what could we do to mitigate any customer issues that would come with this release? Things like what do they need to know? A lot of it's more customer marketing for existing customer base of new features coming out.
I think 6 weeks out is pretty good. I'm curious, you mentioned like, how did you come up with this tiger team? Like how do you select who's involved? Because often I think some of what I've dealt with in the past is kind of like, it's tough to figure out, okay, which representatives from the sales team should we be pulling off of, you know, more sales calls. There's usually a select few that are really interested in being part of the rest of what's going on behind the scenes. But it's tough sometimes, I feel like, to like really identify and continue cultivating that group. How do you do it?
It definitely was hard to get this off the ground. This actually definitely has strong influence from our executive team, especially our CMO that report into. It started about a year ago, actually. We launched this again at the beginning of in January. So a year ago, we did kind of like a mini version of it. We had a new product. It came out of a new product that was launching, and we had like a tiger team. And then we realized that it worked. It worked pretty good. So as we're building out, it really took the buy-in from the executive team of each of these areas to be like, hey, this worked. So you had a proven like a mini pilot program of it. How can we replicate this? It also came with a need where we were at the end of the year, we're trying to plan out our annual strategy. And we're like, hey, we got too much going on. How can we be smarter with what we have on the books? So we are like, let's just start this up. And we want to focus on here. It also aligned to the marketing team where they're kind of putting their ad dollars. So there was 3 areas of the business that they really wanted to focus on. So we're like, okay, hey, that's a great idea. This is where you're focusing. Every department should be aligned. Like, we need sales input, we need product input. So let's just start this tiger team up. So we've been running that for about a quarter now. And it's like, again, we had that one example, but it's shown really well how it could work together. And then to answer your other question of who got involved, the point people we chose were what you might call that, maybe like you're the point person for that product line. So maybe you have a seller that's like an expert in this. But again, obviously you don't want them to get off a selling, but these meetings are every other week for 30 minutes. And they're very, very agenda. Again, the agenda is very focused. Like, we're talking about only this, come prepared. So that also helps that we do a lot of stuff offline, come prepared to the meeting to collaborate, and then have your other one-off stuff offline.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I often find that a lot of sellers are involved in other marketing activities anyways, you know, whether it's getting more marketing insights or like connecting them to other people. So why not have it be around a very big company objective, you know? And like you said, it sounds like you do it in a really focused way. The project you mentioned, I thought was really interesting because I think conventionally, like some people just think of product marketers as we work in like messaging and positioning and launching stuff, but often it is like also the, I don't even know how to describe it, like the very operational projects. Like how do we improve this demo experience? Things like that. And I think, and I'm connecting some dots from our earlier conversation, but I think it's a symptom of a lot of the advice we see is from big tech. It's from people that are working in huge companies where, yeah, maybe they can focus on positioning and messaging and specific kind of sub functions of product marketing. But when I talk to folks working in small tech, and as you describe it, it looks a little different and there's a lot more lessons. So I'm curious to hear a little bit more about your take, your perspective on kind of this divide and what it looks like today.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, definitely a lot of, even like a lot of people I talk to that are from other companies or you're not at the big tech companies. A lot of people have small teams of maybe 5 to 7 people. Maybe there's only one product person. One of the challenges that I've seen with these roles is that some of the advice that you see out there, again, is catered towards like, oh, I have a 10 to 15 people. I can do all these things. And then when it comes down to the smaller teams, they feel strapped. They're just like, I'm working so much. I'm just like in execution mode. Like I'm just head down. It just never ends. But one advice I would have for there is instead of, obviously you got to get the work done, but like turning from reactive to more focus and strategy. Like you really have to take a step back. What is it that is driving revenue for the business that we need to focus on? And maybe it's not this product. Not saying no, we're saying not right now. We really need to focus on this and also think about it in seasons. So right now, I know it's hard. We always think in quarters, we do your quarterly metrics, but I always try to think about like seasonal flows because also with the product evolutions and stuff. So one other thing you can do is to, as you're sitting down to have these things that you're focused on, what else you can do to level up your own role in this voice? Because again, you're just like, I'm just doing the tactical. So it's shifting maybe some of the conversations that you're saying from tactical to how you're adding value. So instead of saying, oh, here you go, I got this new one pager here for you. It's here's a one pager. You're going to use it in mid sales functions because we're seeing that people, one of the objections is pricing. So this is an ROI calculator and you use this to give it to the secondary decision maker because they're trying to convince their boss. And this is really the value prop that's going to hit home right now where we're holding up. So it's how you're adding more value to that conversation kind of elevates you as like a thought leader in that speak. And you're focusing on the things that matter right now versus like the 100 things all over the place.
I like that a lot. It's like zooming out to see the big picture. And even if you are, it sounds like delivering something that's more tactical, it's like really tie that to the larger scope of things and make sure people understand that. I'm curious now you've been in multiple roles, like how do you build that internal influence? This is a great example of it, but yeah, how do you make sure that, you know, your teams really understand the value of product marketing and where it sits in the organization?
Yeah, I think again, it's always tying it back to taking it away from the tactical and reactive and how you're adding, again, more value into the conversation. So if we're talking about the product side of things, it's bringing in maybe the win-loss analysis, which you'll need maybe for the sales side, but bringing that back into the product side, for example, of like, here's a trend I'm seeing over this last quarter. That's even something simple, just exporting in the Salesforce, here's your win-loss. You can use ChatGPT. What are the top common things, top common comments, and that just starts the conversation. It adds another value add into here versus just tactical. On the marketing side, again, it's always tying back what you're doing to revenue driving activities. Again, you're not the one selling. You might not be the one pushing the demand gen programs out, but what can you do? And going to the demand gen example, it's you've done the research. You're seeing here's the like top keywords that people are searching organically for us. Are these integrated into our solution briefs? And it's maybe leveling up what you learned last quarter from those win-loss stuff. Do we already have an asset out there that we can maybe level up, kind of refresh it with these new insights coming in? It's like maybe going back and maybe trying to level up the value-added conversation there.
Yeah. Really interesting. In terms of like balancing the strategic and operational pieces, how do you do that? Like, and I ask that because sometimes I find like I'm chasing the thread of something that I think is strategic, I think is important to the business. And then let's just give an example. So it's more concrete. Like we really had to improve our early access program, and I felt like it was a really and a big barrier to making sure our existing customers can realize additional value from the product, new features we launch, things like that. Of course, that being kind of the path to an upsell. So I went down the rabbit hole of like helping set this up. And then at a certain point, I realized like, okay, I think I did what I need to do here. It's time to hand this off to someone more operational. But I think what often happens when I talk to other product marketers as well, it's like we do a good job setting the strategy, setting up the program, and then often it's like those operations often like especially in a small tech world, they don't just like start running smoothly on their own. There's either we have to assign the right people to do them or find another way where we get back out of the kind of weeds and can work on other things. How do you balance that? How do you kind of try to pass the torch?
Yeah, no, that's definitely hard. I think from a beginning planning part of it, it's definitely getting buy-in from that department. And it goes back into, I guess, maybe like I said, like the seasons. Like right now we're focused on growing revenue or growing this customer base A and customer base B. To be successful, here's what we need to do. And maybe it's really tying it back around your go-to-market strategies. And I know not everything's a big launch, but think about like growing a segment to me is a launch. You got to launch a whole bunch of tactics around it. So if you frame it more of it internally about here's we're launching a re-engagement program or this, and it's tying to this major initiative. So getting that cross-team buy-in, maybe from the beginning before you even start, and also realigning to like it's helping this group of projects that we're working on. I've seen success there, but also it's also your counterparts. So usually, if there's a an area of the business, so if there's like a product line, or maybe you're grouped by segments, there's a pod of people. Maybe getting the pod idea. If that's sorry, tiger team, be like, and I know early access programs be one of the tacticals you're doing. That's a huge thing. That's not like an easy like one pager that you're putting out. So in order to do that kind of thing, it obviously has to be something big enough for the company that everyone should have a buy-in to have some kind of pull in the project.
Yeah, your pod structure really does solve for some of this because then everyone knows kind of the role they play. Interesting. Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation, Laura. I think we covered a lot actually in a short amount of time. One of the questions we ask, and this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, is a fun one that I actually came up with from talking to a mentor and another podcast host. And the question is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
I would say product marketing is bringing clarity to chaos.
Nice. Can you elaborate a little more on that one?
Yep. So by the time it hits your desk, it's always a five alarm. Five alarm. It's crazy. And we're always like, yeah, okay, we'll just figure this out. We are the glue, the internal comms. That's also something to I didn't really emphasize enough. Like your internal communications is like probably like majority of your role is bringing you got the chaos going on, maybe new stuff. We don't know who to target. You got maybe we need to push this out more. So you're kind of bringing that, you're kind of that glue to kind of calm the chaos and then bring some insights to everyone and push and pull the levers to kind of what we need to move this along to market.
That explains why I feel a lot of product marketers have that like zen-like feeling to them, right? Like we kind of have to bring the calm. I love that. Okay. Well, Laura, this has been great. How can listeners learn more about what you're up to and what you're doing? Yeah.
Sure. Just I guess on LinkedIn, I'll be Laura Kaminsky, and you can search iTrade Network, and then we could also maybe share out a link to my profile.
Deal. That sounds great. Well, thank you again. It's been a great convo.
Great. Thank you so much.